So challenges facing the poultry industry. We'll start with the ShopRite's experience with local producers versus wholesalers of imported products. So we just want to start by saying ShopRite as a company primarily deals with local manufacturers when it comes to chicken products. We prefer, and if we import, we prefer to directly deal with importers and not use wholesalers where possible. This isn't always possible depending on what the requirements in the particular situation of product availability and pricing is. So we might use wholesalers if and when we do need them. 97% of all chicken sold in ShopRite Group is produced locally. 3% is imported by wholesalers or directly by the ShopRite Group itself. If you look at Hungry Lion is 100% locally produced chicken only. They do not import any product that they sell. Just to clarify reasons why we would import or buy from wholesalers, we would import when there's specific shortages of products like wings, drum heads, and leg quarters. These products are not always freely available from local manufacturers, and we might be forced to import those to fulfill our requirements. Or we would look to import or procure from a wholesaler should that cost be commercially cheaper than what we are currently procuring from local manufacturers. I must also point out at this time that when we do promotions as a group, we do have problems with local manufacturers that are unable to keep up with our physical demand and product requirements. So we do struggle with that, and it is an ongoing problem, and it has been for many years. ShopRite's experience of sale of local product versus imported products. Like I stated previously, 97% of our products in terms of chicken is procured locally and 3% is imported. Imported products are mostly used in value-added products, so we do not particularly retail them majority of the time directly to the end consumer. We would use these products in our delis. We would grill them as an example. These products that would be imported or bought from wholesalers then would traditionally be in bulk retail form, bulk packs, like 10 or 15 kilogram boxes. These products are not suitable for retail purposes, and thus we do not apply them to retail purposes. I just want to point out at this point in time as well, for the first time this year, grilled fish in our delis has actually surpassed deli grilled chicken. And that we feel is directly as a result of the increase in the chicken prices. So the fish has just become more affordable. So there is a definite consumer change in purchasing patterns when it comes to that product. All imported products are labeled indicating the country of origin, be that for wholesale or repurposing or for retail sales. The bulk of our chicken that we actually sell in our business is in the IQF mixed portions. The IQF is for individually quick frozen product. Those would be the 2 kilogram or 5 kilogram bags that you see in our ShopRite or Checkers stores. Internationally, the IQF format is not freely available. It is not a standard format that you find in a lot of the international markets. So it's very much a South African format. And if you do find it in other markets, it's traditionally priced more premium than regular frozen products. ShopRite's position on brining. ShopRite supports government's efforts to reduce brining in chicken. We believe it's in the best interest of consumers. The impact of the implementation of the lower level of brining during the last quarter of 2016, when it was dropped from 30% to 15%, that significantly impacted our volume of chicken, frozen chicken sales, in that we had a 20% volume drop in chicken sold in the IQF format. And that is directly related to increase in pricing due to the reducing of the brining of the chicken. Next point resulted as the reduction of the brining resulted in a 17% increase on average across the products. It is very difficult for our group to explain this to the average consumer why actually we had to put up the prices by 17% the moment the brining reduced. And there is debate to be had if the consumer actually understands the brining as it is currently and that the chicken is injected. The brining reduction also resulted in a lot of size changes due to the reduced brining. Traditionally, we used to sell majority of our product in a 2 or 5 kilo format. Now, due to the reduction in brining, a lot of the manufacturers chose to just take out the brining bit and just reduce the pack sizes. So now we're seeing a lot of different formats, 1.5, 1.7, 2 kilogram, 4.2 or 5 kilogram. And this is leading to a lot of confusion from a consumer perspective because where it used to be rather standard format, Now there's so many different sizes, the consumers are struggling to understand the cost per kilo of all these different pack formats. Imported products in general are not brine injected, and that is very much a South African format injection. South African poultry pricing policy of ShopRite Checkers. We price our products market related. What we mean is we would survey our position retailers and make sure that we are competitively, if not better priced, on all chicken products. These reviews are done on a weekly basis and we would adjust our pricing according to market movements. Chicken is a significant percentage of our total turnover, and thus we do very much keep an eye on the pricing and ensure that we are competitive at all times in the market. Just to give you an indication of ShopRite's position of chicken, frozen chicken business of all the retailers in South Africa, top end formal retailers, if I can just clarify, according to Nielsen's, we have 60% market share of all frozen chicken in formal retail format. We have a 30% market share of all fresh chicken in formal retail as per Nielsen. ShopRite uses chicken very much as a draw card for consumers to our stores. It is used as a to help on price perception and entrench our low price image in our consumers. So what it comes down to, we're always going to be aggressively priced on chicken. That is the way our business has been built and has been for many years. Chicken is the preferred source of protein for poorer consumers, and that it is very important that we try and keep the pricing of chicken as low as possible.
Good morning. Apologies for being late.
Well, come quietly then, thank you, because we've started. And why didn't you go out and come through there? Of course, not everyone is used to these rooms, you know. Do proceed.
The average margin on IKF chicken within the ShopRite group varies from -2% to 2% over the last 12 months. Just to point back, I mean, it reiterates that we price chicken very aggressively in the market and try and do the best for our consumers. Problems within the poultry industry. The current problems identified is the drought that's caused pricing pressure on local manufacturers due to the high price of maize, which is obviously a key input cost in terms of chicken feed. Brining regulations, which were incorporated in the last quarter of last year, had a negative impact on local manufacturers due to the increased price levels, and that the drop in demand or the drop in actual volume sold, as I showed previously. Chicken manufacturers locally have limited opportunities in terms of export markets, so they're very much reliant on the South African market to maintain sales and growth. Local manufacturers slaughter chicken at 32 to 36 days, while the national standard are 42 days. The reason being that we need to sell the whole chicken in South Africa, and thus we get lower prices, we need smaller chickens. Just to clarify that, so we have to sell the whole chicken in South Africa. Now, other markets like the European Union or the Americans, they prefer the breast meat, and they try and sell the brown meat, which is not eaten or consumed as much within their markets, to other markets like South Africa as an example. Now, South Africa, people prefer the brown meat as well. So if we can find the offset for our breast meat, then we will be able to grow the bigger chickens, because currently we're trying to grow smaller ones, and they're not as efficient as it would be versus other markets, because we have to try and get that chicken at a price point within a bag to sell to the consumer. We need the export markets to grow the chicken industry, just back to what I stated now, to help balance our carcasses, similar to what the European Union and the United States are doing. And the other point that we believe is a problem currently is, if you look back, fresh and frozen chicken in the 90s were a lot closer aligned on pricing than that they are today. Today, fresh chicken can almost be priced at double the price of frozen chicken, and we believe that the chicken manufacturers are also pushing the fresh pricing in of the frozen pricing to try and make up for low margins on the frozen chicken. And if they actually price them more similarly or line them closer, that we would have more significant participation and growth in fresh chicken. Inputs on challenges faced. Just from ShopRite side, we will continue to support the local manufacturers by stocking their products in our stores. We will continue to work in the interest of consumers to negotiate the lowest prices on locally produced chicken products every day. We will remain open to engaging with various stakeholders to address the issues at hand in the interest of the consumers. We do agree that a trade-based intervention is needed and must help protect the chicken producers. From our point of view, we would prefer that we look at ways to strengthen our chicken producers versus just trying to protect them from international market competition. Ways to strengthen them would be to find them additional markets within in the SADC Union, Southern African Development Community countries. I mean, if you look at it, a lot of the SADC countries currently ban South African chickens, even though we are trading as one community. There must be intervention made there to try and give us access to those markets and try and grow our industry specifically. And from there, we can look at the rest of Africa and then even the European Union. We must find ways and help the manufacturers to reduce costs versus just trying to protect them by making imported or international product more expensive by putting duties or other safeguarding mechanisms in place. Ways that we feel they can be looked at is government funding or incentives, rebates on feed, or even development on manufacturing processes. Ultimately, we need to find a way to make sure that chicken prices don't raise any more than they've done already. I mean, the poor consumers are really having a tough time out there, and as it is the primary source of protein, it does severely negatively impact them. And the last question we want to bring is, I mean, we showed now that we make up 60% of formal retail's frozen chicken in the South African market, yet only 3% of our frozen chicken products is imported. So if you look at the volume of imports coming into this country, it's not coming by us. So the question is, who is importing it? Where is it being sold, and in what format? Because it's not via us. Thank you.
Before you leave there, we will be engaging with you later, but can you just explain to us your statement under 3, position on brining, D, where you make it very clear that these packages are labeled 2 kgs, etc., etc., 1.5. Are you saying that by law you're not required to note on each pack what it costs per kg?
Correct.
So you're not required to do that?
No.
In labeling? Well, as labeling comes under this committee, we'll have to look into that.
Ma'am, just let me explain. So traditionally, the product format was a 2 kilogram. So when you reduce 15% of the water that's being removed out of there, effectively that same product becomes a 1.7 kilo. So the products are being sold and they are price marked within the store. But now when a consumer is standing in front of the shop, he's looking, he's seeing a 1.7 kilogram bag being sold at 30 rand. Next to it, there's a 2 kilogram product being sold at 40 rand. But it does not state the cost per kilogram, and that's the point that I'm trying to make.
Well, I'm just saying that comes under this committee, and it is something we would want to review. So we'll take that up. Yes, Honourable Hill-Lewis?
But, ma'am, that is a critical point. Sorry, can I just get the names of the presenters?
Jakob Brandt and Chris Dierden.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Brandt, it's a critical point that the chairperson raises, and I just want to probe that a little bit more. I would expect that if there is a 15% reduction in brining, it would be acceptable to have a 15% increase in cost, and that's still beneficial to the consumer because they're paying 15% more, but at least it's chicken, not water.
Assuming the consumer understands the brining.
I understand that point, but what I want to ask is, are you saying that the price increase has taken place without an increase in chicken volume? How do you explain that?
If the pack size remains at a 2 kilo,
then there's more chicken.
Yes, there's more chicken, but it's still a 2 kilogram pack being sold to the consumer. The consumer is still buying 2 kilograms.
But you just said this, it's now a 1.7 kilogram pack.
I said that some of the manufacturers have moved it down to 1.7, some have remained at 2 kilograms.
But have they done it 1.7 at the old price?
You see, this is a matter that we need to take up, and it's not clear. It really isn't clear. You've already pointed out to us that there is no legal requirement for anyone to put the price per kilo. That, you know, you've pointed out, we said we'll look into that. But I think the clarification here is exactly on the meat, the cost of that meat. Now, I'm going to ask the Honourable Hill-Lewis, because it is an important point, just put the question more clearly.
If I can just check, I'm comfortable that if there's a 15% reduction in brining, there should be an increase in cost that is still beneficial to consumers because it's an increase in actual physical chicken, not water. But if you are saying that that producers are now selling a 1.7 kilogram bag at the same price as they used to sell a 2 kilogram bag, then that is price gouging. So I want to understand exactly what they're doing.
That's not the case. So the 2 kilogram took an increase, and then there was a slight reduction to offset the reduction in the brining to the 1.7 or the 4.2 kilograms.
But of course, we haven't completed with you. You will remain here until we have, when come to the engagement. But there's certain clarifications that are urgently required, and members may seek that. But I can see that the retailers, it's a long time since you've been here in these engagements. If I may point out that when someone is on the floor, you wait for the chair to indicate that you may respond, lest we turn this into a market. And then you know how difficult it is to manage the market. All of you know that. Right. So if I can thank you, and if you would just make way, perhaps moving to the right or whatever. But I do want to point out that we have here trade and industry, the department. We've got the Director General with us here that perhaps many of you have met. That is a Mr. Lionel October. He was here a minute ago, just nipped out. We have the Chief Operating Officer, Ms. Jody Skultz. We have Mr. Garth, Deputy Director General, Mr. Garth Strachan, and he is the head of the Industrial Division. He's here as well. I'm looking for the rest of people. I see Mr. Gunga, Director IDD. I'm just looking for your face.
No, ma'am, he didn't come.
Oh, okay, right. No, thank you for that. But there it is. We have the top people from trade and industry present here with us. And thank you very much to ShopRite. And now we have Woolworths. Is that correct? Woolworths. I'm just looking at the folks from Woolworths. You'll indicate if this is correct, Mr. Novak, head of fresh foods, Mr. Mitchell, trading head for protein. All right, let me, okay, so we don't have Mr. Mitchell. Miss Noganta, right, stakeholder relations, Miss Carstensen, legal and compliance, where is he? It says Miss. Right, okay, and then we have Miss Goodchild Brown. All right, thank you very much. So then, if you know how the system is working now, you coming in second, and in fact ShopRite gave you a little bit of time there, I'm sure everyone noticed. But do go ahead, your time would start now and go on till about, say, 10 past 10, all right? What are we looking at? It's 10 o'clock, 10 past 10, 15 minutes past. All right, please start.
Latifa Beha, then on my left, my colleague will also be presenting the technical side of the questions. So, Honourable Chairperson, first of all, we'd just like to send apologies from our CEO, Zara Rylands, and our MD of Food, Spencer Son. And after that, we have the most senior people here presenting. And we thought we'd just give a very quick update to give you context of the poultry department within Woolworths.
One moment. some members of parliament who just, from what I understand, new to the committee, but all will be explained, no doubt, after the committee meeting. We'll get a better understanding of this. But do proceed.
Part of a broader group Woolworths Holding, which also consists of a clothing business, a financial service business, and we have an offshore business in Australia. Within the stores that we sell our fresh chicken, predominantly 410 stores throughout South Africa, and we have some smaller stores in Africa, which we generally source locally within those African countries. And then we also have a financial service business. What we are also, we have managed to grow our business as well as our poultry business in the last 5 years. In relation to that, we've managed to, the slide at the bottom, almost double our jobs over the past 5 years, as well as the growth in our stores. I think most of you will know, but we are a specialist food retailer. We call ourselves a specialist retailer. We are predominantly serving LSM 8 to 10 and probably more market share in LSM 9 and 10. And we predominantly have a small food stores consisting of about 500 square meters, and our larger stores would be around about 2,000 square meters. We have 8% share of the foods business in South Africa, and 95% of that is done in our own label, and then we have 5% of national brands, and 92% of all food sold in Woolworths is locally produced, with some offshore importing, which we're looking at trying to replace where we can. And obviously, if it's an Italian product that needs to be Italian, then we will still continue to import that. But anything we can produce local, we are trying to move that to local sourcing as much as possible. We have to give customer value and shareholder value, but at the same time, as important to those two is our good business journey, which looks at a number of issues across the local industry, whether it's the impact on communities, local sourcing, or around energy, and we have a number of initiatives that are driving those, as well as some of the ones we'll share with you now from a poultry point of view. Just on our fresh chicken ourselves is we're quite unique in the market. Predominantly, most of our chicken is sold fresh. We have a very different trim on our chicken, and in essence, our customers only want to buy what they can eat, so our trim is quite high. We are only grain-fed, our chicken in South Africa. A lot of the chicken is animal byproduct fed, so we are only grain-fed. And we have a large part of our chicken business is free-range. And we also only air-chill our chicken, not water-chill our chicken. So there is quite a difference that our customers do demand from us, and we work closely with the suppliers to deliver that.
So in terms of our poultry story, all our chicken, which is fresh, frozen, and rotisserie, sold within Woolworths stores, is locally sourced. And to note that our fresh and rotisserie chicken has never been frozen before. Our frozen chicken is sort of 1% of our total business. In a market that's worth 36 billion, the woolly size is only 3% of the market. As an ingredient into product, 95% of all our chicken is also locally sourced. And our priority is always to local sourcing. We have progressed with a localization strategy to mitigate the 5% imported chicken used as an ingredient. In terms of suppliers, our local producers are regionally based and they conform to our strict quality standards. We work directly with our suppliers in partnerships, and we don't work through wholesalers, and some of those partnerships are 80 years old. 50. My apologies, Honourable Chairperson. 50. The company is 85, but the partnership with one of our poultry suppliers is 50 years old. Yeah. My humblest apologies. In terms of brining, the brining limits set in the poultry regulations have had a minimal impact on us as an organisation. All our value-added chicken was already compliant. The brine level in our IQF chicken portion, which is only 1% of our business, was changed due to regulations. It was at 24%, and we brought it in line to 15% in terms of market requirement, A very important point to note is that our brining is only there in terms of heat and quality. In terms of our value propositions, we continuously focus on providing value, and to us value means the combination of price and quality for our consumers and our suppliers. Our food prices are determined by a complex range of variables, which we know the price of ingredients like maize, labor, and fuel impact the cost of raw materials. In terms of the way forward, and then also to note, we adjust our price in terms of inflation and deflation in the market. And in terms of the way forward, we propose an inclusive approach with government, industry's full value chain to find sustainable solutions going forward, bearing in mind the price of maize, efficiencies, and regulatory costs. And just to call out again that we do have local mitigation plans to mitigate our imported chicken that we have, which is only 5% of the ingredients that we use. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that very succinct presentation. One moment. Just before we move on and wait until we have the general engagement, I just wanted to be clear, you know, on the issue we asked for the price issue also to be addressed. We've certainly got the way you are producing, you know, the chickens that you buy, exactly what kind of chickens they are. But with respect to the price issue here on the retail markup, you purchase it at a particular price from the supplier. Is your markup as high as 44%?
No. Honourable Chairperson.
And I saw the brining one. The only other issue that we have here, for the moment that is, before everyone gets involved in this, is... you speak about the, we spoke about the labelling just now, as you know. With respect to Woolworths labelling, do you note on every product sold there the price per kg?
No, we don't, Honourable Chair. Our systems cannot do that at the moment.
What system have you got?
Sorry?
I thought this could be computerized.
No, it can, except we have a limitation at the moment. Absolutely.
Sorry.
Just on that, but for lamb, you do.
Yes.
I know, this is what
puzzles me, you see. Honourable Hill-Lewis? You know the issue around the price per kg, which we raised under ShopRite? The question was very simply put, does Woolworths note on every package the price per kg? They were saying they don't, and that's because they can't.
Honourable Chair.
Specify the type of chicken. Yes.
Honourable Chairperson, I mean, on our fresh chicken we do it, and on our frozen chicken it literally is 1% of our sales, and we'd be very happy to do that. My understanding is it's just a technical issue we've got in our system from a frozen side, but there's no issue for us to go price per kilo either.
Can see those who shop at Woolworths were surprised. Okay. No, thank you for the moment, but of course the committee would like to engage more fully later. Thank you. I must say I believe my PCO is shopping at ShopRite as well as Spa and all the others, you know. Some of these places are not open when we are leaving for work, as you know. Right, so then we've got Pick and Pay, the next crowd up here, Pick and Pay, and on the Pick and Pay we have Mr. Ackerman, General Manager, Head of Fresh. On and I'm sure Parliament appreciates you saving it paper. We always would. But on the other hand, it leaves members unprepared. And this is pick and pay, huh? Right, while we're just waiting for that, I understand from staff that the two members who joined us are new members of Parliament, and I would like to welcome you to Parliament. Had we known earlier, we could have thrown out the red carpet, but we weren't informed earlier. All right, sorry about that. But you are very welcome, and this is a very interesting engagement. All right, thank you. Mr. Ackerman.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to share the pick and pay experience in the poultry business. There's three guiding principles that's important for pick and pay when we conduct business with our suppliers. The first one is that we're very passionate about our customers. It's been part of the pick and pay values since Mr. Ackerman founded the pick and pay business 50 years ago. We have been loyal to the pick and pay, or to the local industry, for the past 50 years, the local poultry industry specifically. And as a principle, we support foreign investment in South Africa rather than just importing product. We believe in the value adding taking place in South Africa to build the local economy. I'm going to answer each one of your six questions and address as per your request, and I'll stick to that format during the presentation. So Pick and Pay deals with both the local suppliers as well as with the wholesalers. And Pick and Pay has had long-standing relationships with both of them. Less than 3% of our total poultry sales is derived from imported product, and we have specific product specifications that we ask suppliers to comply with when they pack the product under the Pick and Pay own brand. In terms of the local suppliers, Pick and Pay work quite hard with the local suppliers, its suppliers, to improve carcass utilization. It's part of the bigger balance for a supplier to improve its realization per kilogram if they're able to achieve higher rand values for specific cuts versus a lower rand value on other cuts that we could utilize the whole chicken. The wholesalers have got the ability to offer product based on international market conditions, for example, where a market is focused more on the brown meat or prefers the brown meat, there would be an opportunity to export the white meat, and then in the case of the American chicken, for example, that's been offered as an import to South Africa. We are in daily and weekly discussions with our suppliers about pricing and about volumes that we take, and ultimately we buy what is best for our customers. It doesn't make sense for any retailer to procure stock at the door of the supplier and leave the supplier happy, but the customer is not buying any of the stock because the pricing is out. So there's a robust discussion taking place. Local versus imported stock, we offer the customers a choice. Having said that, imported stock is roughly 33% of our total purchases or sales of chicken. The majority of imported product in South Africa is sold in independent retailers and the informal market. I think, as you would have gathered from the presentations that you've had to date. And Pick and Pay is just basically the other way around, to say it's 97% local product. And we have clearly favored local supply over the past 50 years. You had a specific question about brining and our view on brining. We definitely support the government's initiative to reduce the brining levels and specifically to improve the regulatory impact thereof, to ensure that we actually offer the customers what we claim to offer the customers. And the resulting price increases with the brining reduction has made the customer consider other alternatives and made other choices. They have been considering fresh, much more focus on what is the pickup price of a specific product, meaning the number of units in a packet. If you indicate the rand value per kilogram at 49.99 per kilo, but there's 5 chicken pieces in it, and the rand value, just for all of our ease of calculation, the rand value of the 5 chicken pieces is 24.99. Then the customer is looking at a meal solution, and the meal solution is 5 chickens for 5 rand a piece. I can buy it for my family for tonight instead of a bigger brining pack. So that is the information that Pick and Pay can see in its smart shopper details. with our extensive information that's available within Smart Shopper, we have got the ability to see what shifts customers have made as part of this brining increase and therefore the resulting price increase of the chicken. You asked a question about pricing. For the majority of South African consumers, poultry remains the preferred source of protein. And Pick and Pay is promoting on and off, Pick and Pay's pricing on promotion and off promotion is in line with the retail market. Pick and Pay is not the price leader, we follow, and in some instances we follow, we lead the market with our IQF pricing and then specifically on the fresh. Frozen poultry is a heavily promoted article in South African retail. I think you would be surprised, or I would be surprised, if you were to open a supplement or a newspaper without finding some form of frozen poultry advert by some retailer in that specific advert. So inputs on the challenges faced. We have worked together with our local suppliers on the carcass utilization. I think I've shared that with you. Pick and Pay supports any initiative assisting the local industry to grow sales and to become internationally competitive. If it's with different cuts, different utilization of the chicken, different portions, 100% in support of that. We will remain a loyal supplier and supporter of the local industry. And we must all bear in mind that the local producers' employees are our customers. If we do not, that we lose customers. And that's a big focus for us. Thank you. Yes, Madam Chair.
We release you. And that is, you mentioned here under pricing, Pick and Pay pricing on promotion and off promotion is in line with the retail market. Does that mean, how do you get into line with the retail market? Is it through collusion? Is it through analysis? How do you get into line?
That could be a quick 10% gone, wouldn't it? So, no, definitely not. Pick and Pay does weekly price surveys in competitor stores to ensure that we offer the customers a similar offer to the rest of the retail industry.
So there's really no competition?
No, there's
just all keep in line?
No, not no. It would be nice because that would require some collusion. If I would know what the shop price...
Yeah, that's right. Now, I just wondered, and you know, when one talks about being in line, you're towing the lines, a particular price line. I mean, I'm not surprised there isn't much difference if you're all towing the line. Eh? I thought you people were a little bit more competitive, but clearly not.
We have to sit here and smile, madam.
Yeah, I know.
In the real world,
right.
It's not.
Anyway, are you the grandson of the original Ackerman?
No, I've got a double N at the end. So.
You have. So you're not one of the fortunate, wealthy ones. Okay.
They said they were nice people, but I asked them, I'm prepared to drop the one, and they said, thank you, but no thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Ackerman. Did you? Yes, thank you. Sorry. I missed that.
When they say the 97% local, what is your relationship with Massmart?
Nothing, ma'am.
Come again?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
No, I know that the only thing I know about Massmart is that, Peter Arnold used to be a commercial head at Pick and Pay, and then he, about 3 years ago, moved over to Massmart to head up their fresh department. But that's as close as... Head up the fruit and veg. That's as close as I've ever gotten to someone from asthma.
All right. Well, we'll have the opportunity to engage more vigorously afterwards. But I'm very pleased that the vote is all very friendly. Right. Can we then move on to Bob?
You are, okay. So all over the place, okay. Now, many. All right. Well, let's see. That was that spa. Are you Mr. Clarkson? Graham Clarkson's group house brands manager. Did you bring a Mr. Roots with you?
I did bring Mr.
Butchery?
Roots. Yes, I did.
In the butchery.
He's the good-looking youngster on the far side. And then we have Mr. Gordon Pentecost, who's our group attorney.
The group attorney with a name like Pentecost, great.
Well, from Durban, ma'am.
Right. No, thank you very much. Why don't we get started, right?
Right, ma'am, can I start? Thank you. Good morning to you all, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you. I'd just like to talk you through where the Spa Group Limited fits into in retail in South Africa. We are the holding company that's listed on the JSE, and we have 6 distribution centers around the country, and we sell to independent retailers that carry our brand, franchisees. So we have 880 stores around the country, 6 distribution centers doing 52 billion rand a year. And so what I'll be talking to you through today is when I mention gross profits and margins, I'll be talking about the group limited margins, not the stores, because we have no control over the margins they make. We try and control it, but that is a voluntary buying operation. So if I can just go on to the challenges. When you have a look at what is happening in SPA, and we seem to have a different, totally different view of what's going on with imported chicken within the SPA group. The imported chicken has grown from 14.2% in 2016 to 21.9% of our business. The local market has dropped from 85.8 down to 78.9. That chicken is mainly coming through the importers. I've named them. That's Hume International, Murlog, Federated Timbers, Transtrade, Chester, Etlin, Excellent Meats, and QK Meats. And they are supplying directly to our stores because we don't have as strong a listing and control of what happens in our retailer stores. They're entrepreneurs. Our retailers can buy from where they like. And I think with the ShopRite and Pick and Pay and the Woolworths, the listing is a lot stronger, and their store managers can't buy out. They have to buy only what is listed by the head offices. So hence, our stores are targeted by all the importers on quite a strong basis. Most of the product that our stores buy are bought in the cuts of leg quarters, fillets, and individual portions, and they're sold in our hot foods departments. So they really aren't used for retail selling. They're further processed into chicken and chips and crumb chicken and things like that. So that's what the imported products are mainly used for. Just to go into what is happening with us when it comes to the local markets, obviously our SPA brand is sourced from local markets only, and we do not use any imported product in the private label at all. So what has happened, you can see the sales have grown from 66 million to 125 million in SPA, and the house brand has also grown by 11.22% from 401 million to 446 million. This is, I'm quoting, is RQF portions. So those are the portions. So the SPA group policy is certainly buy local and not to support imported products on the private label at all. Just on the house brand versus branded goods, you can see that the house brand has declined 3.74% in growth within the SPA group, and must understand that is with a 20% drop in price due to the brining. So the price of chicken physically came down by 20% because the brining was reduced by 17%. It worked out to about a 20% reduction in price. If I could just clarify the pricing issues for you with regards to why there's no price per kg on 2 kg and 5 kg product, that's because the market has set unit prices when they advertise only on those products. So nobody advertises IQF chicken 2 kg and 5 kg by kg price. They all advertise it as a unit price. So it is a major issue in the industry. And the other issue in the industry is that there should be some conformity when it comes to prices of products or weights of products. It should be standardized in the country. We shouldn't be allowing manufacturers to reduce the price of product put into the same size packet as a 2kg packet and sell it at the same price as 2kg. So the conformity should be, if the industry... So what I'm saying to you is there should be some sort of standards from the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries saying that IQF chicken has to be sold in regulated pack sizes. That isn't the case at the moment. So a supplier could sit there and put out IQF chicken at 1.7, as Mr. Jacob Brunt put out 1.7 kgs, but charge 2 kg prices. And it can be, as you were saying, gouging or whatever you call it, but it's hoodwinking the consumer. So we honestly believe at SPA that you should be going out and having a set of weights and measures for IQF chicken so that it can be consistent throughout the industry. It's not consistent at the moment. And I think it's quite a key issue that you should be taking into account in your committee going forward. So if I could just show you here, on the IQF category, it has declined 20%, and there's the growth. You can see what has happened on products by month, the sales per month. It has declined. It seems to be coming on the up again, but so are the imports growing at the same period, and that's right up until March, 8 weeks ago. Just to talk a little bit about the SPA model, we have to be competitive against market prices, as the rest of the industry is saying. We do take price checks. We go out and obviously we have to fight like hell to get the right prices to be competitive against our opposition. Promotions, we've got a no imported products promotion policy where we will not advertise promoted products from overseas. We will only advertise products that are purchased and manufactured in South Africa. Just to show you what has happened with the change and the aggression coming in on imported chicken, our gross margin has dropped from 9.54% and our distribution to 8.84%. So it's a loss of 0.7% over the last 11 months or 12 months. And that is because we've had to be very much more competitive with the cheaper prices of chicken or prices of chicken being forced down in the industry. Just to answer a few of your other questions, Madam Chair, SPAR agrees with the new brine-in injection regulation, but the industry does need a stronger policing to control the compliance to the new brine-in. Absolutely. Right now, there is not a check on chicken that can be done by any an official auditing company whereby you can find out how much water or brine has actually been injected in the chicken. So it is open to abuse. Where people claim to be brining at 16s or 17s or 18s, but if they put 25% in, nobody would know. And there's no physical audit that can take place to determine that. And our recommendation would be to reduce brining completely in the industry. That's the only way you can control it.
Okay. To that?
I'm sure there would be. The manufacturers would, because it affects their margins, but it's the only way you can sell full poultry products, pure poultry products to the industry, is by not brining at all. Otherwise, it's going to be open to abuse. We need stronger health and safety audits on imported chicken. It's a massive issue with imported chicken coming into the country. We have really, really high standards that we have to meet by the Department of Agriculture in South Africa, where the audits and are very intense, and we find that there's a lot of substandard chicken coming into the country that is old, it's not packed in the right packaging, it doesn't have information that is required by law on the packaging, it comes in clear bags, and it comes in 25 kg, and it's easy to abuse it. And we are very concerned that that chicken is being sold into the bottom end trade. It's been thawed out, and it's been sold as fresh products. And it's a huge health issue, or it could become a health issue in the industry, and it needs to be more conformity. And I believe that we should be having the Department of Agriculture or one of those types of organizations. They should be going overseas and passing every single factory and making sure that the factories conform to our health and hygiene standards, because we cannot just accept that it's a piece of chicken coming in frozen on a boat, that it's in good condition, and we really are totally against that. So we spend a great amount of money, great deal of money, policing our manufacturers, making them obtain the highest hygiene standards, conforming to the packaging regulations to the nth degree, having the products tested on a monthly basis, and yet we can take chicken in from any factory in Brazil or Argentina or anywhere, and really nobody knows where it's come from and whether it conforms to the standards that our South African laws require. And it's a massive issue. It's substandard, most of the product. And that's where, you know, I don't like to say dumping, but certainly when the product is nearing its expiry dates offshore, it certainly will find its way at lower prices into the Southern African market, and it's not good condition. And then, obviously, if the Department of Agriculture gets involved in the factories offshore, then they must demand that the stock is packaged in the correct format to suit the South African market with all the right ingredients and nutritional statements on them, where right now it hasn't got it. Ma'am, that's all I've got to say. Thank you very much for allowing us to talk to you today.
Thank you very much. I must say, I think several committee members are somewhat surprised about hearing about these plastic bags that are just coming in, you know, and you don't have any idea what's in them and where they're from.
The outer
so
carton,
we have to take that further, yes.
Yeah, ma'am, the outer carton has the right information on it, but once the box is opened up, it's in clear bags inside, then anything could happen. So the outer carton conforms to industry standards, but what's inside doesn't, and that's where you need to have that control.
We'll have to clarify that in our engagement with DTI as part of this, as to what can be done in that regard. But thank you very much for also for some of your proposals that you've made along, you know, about brining and checking on things outside the country, the standards issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Please remain behind until we are finished with everything. But now we've got Nando's. Nando's, is that Mr. Swanepoel? Where is Mr. Swanepoel? General Manager of Technical Operations. Mr. Eli Delovey and Miss Elsa B. Van Zandt. Yeah, you were always full of jokes at one stage, Nando's.
Come on, ma'am.
You seem to have lost your sense of humor now.
Never, ma'am. Yeah.
Always joking, right? And where, I hope, oh, here it is. I thought for a moment your presentation had disappeared. All right, Nando's, South African brand, eh? Go ahead.
Great. Thank you, ma'am. So you asked us 5 questions. We're going to answer each one individually. First, on our experience of wholesalers versus imported products, Nando's is 100% local. We short of feet.
These days they've got these 2-seaters. Have you seen them? Had the opportunity of visiting Monte Cassino recently with some grandchildren. Anyway, there we are. Don't have to stand.
Great.
All right, now that you're all cozily seated, let's start.
Great. So from our side, we don't use any imported products at all in our chicken or in our products. So we use mostly fresh, and you cannot import fresh chicken. And we don't use imported chicken for a number of reasons. One, we are committed to support the local industry. So we've built up relationships with a number of suppliers over many years. and we would not jeopardize that. Two, fresh product has a short shelf life, so it's actually impossible to source from other countries. And three, our products are packed to very stringent specifications. So we marinate the product in the plant. It uses our own ingredients to do that, and we cannot just source product from the open market at all. So therefore, we have no experience of that in our restaurants. Our policy on pricing. So we buy and sell per portion on our menu, not by weight. And each menu item is made up of a bill of materials that says these are the product that goes into the recipe, and therefore this is what it should cost the end consumer. In terms of matters regarding the poultry industry, one, we're quite concerned about the health and sustainability of the SA industry. We've seen some consolidation already, and we are deeply concerned that you may see more should the current issues continue. Two, and I think this is important for everyone to understand, our industry, our chicken industry, is, in our view, world class. And you know, it's actually quite sad to see a world-class industry in South Africa in this level of distress. For us, quality and safety is of paramount importance. You know, we spend significant time with our suppliers auditing facilities, engaging with them on the quality of the chickens, animal feed farming, etc. We want to know that our product is safe, it's ethically sourced, it's sustainable and within our standards. And we believe that fresh product is of the best possible eating quality. So that's a global NANDO standard that emanated from South Africa, and it's something that we wish to continue. Our concern is that should the industry continue under the current conditions, you know, we may have to look at sourcing from the export market, which we have no desire to do at all. Proposed mechanics. So from our view, we see two things. One, we would like to see imported product held to the same standards as our industry, and I think that was mentioned before in some of the other presentations. So, you know, if you look at what a local poultry producer has to go through in order to supply the local market, it's significant. And yet the imported product doesn't have to deal with most of that. And the second thing is we believe that there needs to be some sort of mechanism put in place to level the playing field. So we're not against imports per se, but what we're concerned about is when you see imports coming in at below the cost of production, like we have seen in this market. And that's it from our side. We always look at that element, but it's also about who can supply us sustainably and within our standards. So it is many of the big producers, but we would certainly look at others if they meet our standards.
Well, we are going to be opening this up, and that will be a question that I will be raising, but in a broader manner. But before I do so, I do want to alert the committee to a couple of good things. We seem to have made greater, faster progress than we anticipated, than the staff anticipated. Of course, we are one short. That is KFC, as you know. And whatever the reason, they say they got it while they were sitting on a plane or something. Anyway.
Are they chicken?
No, the invitation. So I don't know what sort of plane goes for 3 days non-stop, but this is, you know, they will be coming. So we're one short, and we need to get into it. So I thought what would be constructive for this committee would be to ask NEF to come in earlier, which we've done. Okay? So we will continue now with our specific engagement with all of the presenters. And I think it will be important for us all to have a chance at this. So that's the only reason I would say to folks, 3 minutes max to start. Otherwise, you take up all the questions of everyone else, and it's meant to be participatory. Is that clear? All right. 3 minutes, I will ask you to stop and let someone else speak. Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Mantush, Honourable Williams, Honourable Kornel, Honourable Eersterhuizen, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Right.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this has been an invaluable engagement because, and you know, this is part of the reason why we were so insistent that we wanted to speak to retailers, because you are at the coalface, in this essence, closest to the consumer in this value chain. And what fascinates me is, once again, the many contradictions, and I've made this point before throughout these hearings, I think this is our third or fourth day of hearings now, the many contradictions we hear from different role players. So SAPA took major issue with me, and I don't know if SAPA's here, they're welcome to contradict me once again if they want to, when I raised the issue of brining and said it has nothing to do with prices, it doesn't affect their margins whatsoever, and it's not an issue at all. Now, all of you have contradicted SAPA's statements and said it does impact prices, it does impact the consumers, and it is an important issue. And I think that's an important note to draw out of all of your presentations, and thank you for those comments. And I just want to hone in on some of those pricing questions. I agree with the comments made by the gentleman from SPAR that it is an urgent thing that we need to look at for some kind of standardization on what consumers see. And part of the thing that SAPA said was that it's going to immediately lead to price increases for consumers, the price they pay on the shelf. And I just want to reiterate the point that I think all of us need to note, that it is much better to pay a higher price for real products rather than a lower price for fake products, essentially for water. And so as one of you noted, if that does readjust consumers' buying patterns, at the very least they're actually getting real protein for the money they're paying instead of being ripped off. And I think that's an important point to note. Now, The only specific question I have on brining is to Mr. Brunt from ShopRite, that we have had a legislated, or rather by a court, reduction in brining from 30 to 15%, even though the court found, as I think SPAR noted, that in some cases brining was as high as 63% in the past, not 30%. You say that is associated, and thank you very much, you were the only ones that gave a specific number for how that's related to price increases on your shelves, and I'd like to hear from the others, if you have those figures at hand, what has been the consequent price increase since that court judgment. You say it's led to a 17% increase, so which is roughly right, although it seems as though they've actually used it as a great opportunity to achieve an extra 2% margin. So 2% over and above the 15% reduction in brining that was enforced by the court. So is that your understanding as well, that the price increase has actually more than offset the reduction in brining? Because I would be concerned about that. And to get the views of the other retailers, what price increases, do your price increases roughly accord with those observed by ShopRite? And if not, what have they been? My second specific question, Chair, within my 3 minutes, if I may, just to say the other contradiction that I see here, which is obvious, and I'm sure everyone has seen this, is that we are told that import penetration is in the region of 20% of the local market. Now, each one of you, with the exception of Spar, who is one of the smaller players, with respect, each one of you have said it's no bigger than 3% in your businesses. So the question is, where is all this imported chicken being sold? ShopRite has got 60% market share, but only 3% imported chicken. So can I get your thoughts on that as well, please?
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Good point there, Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, we appreciate the inputs. I must confess that I am impressed by the style of business of Spar, because they almost local. They use local products, as opposed to other supply, other businesses. But I just want to check. My concern after these presentations was also to check where does these imports go to? Because everyone speaks of very small percentages that they use in their businesses. I in particular want Woolworths to explain again what they say on their page to the percentages that they put there, and explain to me where does this private label come from? What does it mean? What is the private label? Is it Israelite products? What is it exactly? But I'm impressed by the style of business of Spa. The brining issue. We also concerned about the rise of prices when brine has to be brought down in injecting. Being injected in chicken, and I think it is important that we prioritize people's health and welfare than, you know, considering our profits. And this, the balance, I don't see in the pricing of these companies. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mantash, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I had a question. Mainly it was about where is the imported chicken going, because like Honourable Hill-Lewis said, most of the presenters today spoke to us with about 3% imported, except for Spar. But my other question is, and I'm glad DTI is here, I'd like to know, what is DTI doing to keep the standards of the imported goods the same as the local standards? You know, our oranges go to Europe, they find one black spot on one orange and a whole consignment, a ship comes all the way home again, but it seems that we can import, well, 60 million tons of chicken that doesn't have any standards. So I'd like to know, what is the DTI doing about that? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. Honourable Cornwall.
Thank you, Chairperson. I remember when we started the hearings, I've said that it's like a court case, you know, there's always two sides to this poultry story. And I'm not going to play judge, but I think SAPA's got some homework to do. The European Union was in front of us last week, I think, and they claimed that the markup on chicken is 43% in South Africa, quite different to other parts of the world and especially Europe. Where did they come? Where did they got that from? You know, I don't know, and unfortunately they're not here, we can't ask them, but that is what they told us. So that's why we jumped on the retailers and say, please come and tell us what's going on. So that's why we were upset that you were just sending us letters and not use this opportunity. And I must say, it was very valuable having you here today. It was a good interaction, and I hope that the committee can do it more in future. Now, you've all said that chicken is a big draw card. You use chicken to get people into your shop so that you can sell them other stuff. Now, You've also told us that chicken sales are dropping, and in Czechos, fish is now becoming the chosen commodity for protein. But have you done any research why it has dropped, apart from price? And if I'm saying that the imported chicken is not sold by you, but it is sold into the, shall we call it the informal market or the grey market, have you done any market research at what prices the imported chicken is being sold informally in South Africa? And was that not the reason? Because it's cheaper there, the market shifts to that. Still buying chicken, but not buying chicken from you because it is now being dumped in the informal sector and it's cheaper to buy it, uncontrolled, unfortunately. And that's something, you know, for the authorities to look at. But have you done any market research whether you're competitive with the informal Spaza shop in comparison with ShopRite or Spar or Pick n Pay?
Honourable Kornhoff, it is actually Honourable Eersterhuizen now. Please come in.
Thank you, Chair. Consumers want the cheapest prices and producers want the reasonable profits. We also have the importers, retailers and policy. That's also in this country. We've seen now that most of the bigger outlets doesn't really sell imported chicken. And I've got that same problem that the brown meat is being sold to people who can least afford to check it and to have any control over it at maybe inflated prices. I think it's the gentleman from SPA that mentioned substandard imports, and we had a thing from Brazil, and if I remember correctly, I mentioned it last time, where officials was actually paid to overlook, and especially they mentioned going to Africa, and that's a very big concern, and it's also a very big concern that I say is it 21% or 30% that the EU claims or demand poultry imports to this country, while on the same hand they only import 7% of poultry into Europe. Now, really, we've got policies in place, but to implement this policy seems to be a problem. The control over this salt water injection as well. How do we really have any control over it? I think at this stage the government has absolutely no, the government has to intervene with this, Madam Chair, with policies and tariffs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Eersterhuizen. Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Seeing that I'm the last one, I'm broadly covered.
You've got to mop up everything.
I'm covered, Chairperson, but one important matter to me is the non-enforcement of legislation. And this thing of people just overlooking, even if the legislation is there, there's no punitive measures being implemented, so they're just overlooking it. And the people who's paying the brunt is the consumer on grassroots level. The other thing that I know in terms of imported things is when we look at certain brands, there was a big fuss in a few years back around some brands that's been imported, but you don't look at the manufacturing side when it's being imported. Maybe the department should tell us in terms of when they have those agreements, are they actually being informed, or is there some guidelines in terms of the manufacturing side of those products, especially when we look at the health and safety side of the poultry industry? And if there isn't that side of enforcement is to see the actual factories that's producing those products and really monitoring, if they have monitoring and mechanisms in place to ensure that when this important poultry reach our consumers, we are really sure that we are getting our people safe in terms of health and safety standards. But also the other question, Chair, remains what is happening with this imported chicken? Because now it's clear no one is 5% here and the 3% there, but everyone is complaining in the industry. Imported chicken is a big point of concern. So we have to really trace. Maybe the department can also help us in terms of tracing those goods, because as they arrive in South Africa, there must be a way to trace it to see where they are actually going. I think I'll pause there, Chairperson.
We thank you very much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chair. I've just got a question that I forgot to ask to ShopRite. On their slide that was their point that was numbered E, it talked about if it's cheaper, then they'll buy from imported. So I just want to know how often does that happen and what percentage is it cheaper? For instance, this imported chicken may be cheaper, so you might be importing 100% of your chicken. So I just want some clarity on that point where Checkers ShopRite says, if it's cheaper, they'll import it. Thank you.
Yes. Now, I see DG will be coming in there, but I just, do you want to come in right now, DG, or just hold on for a minute? All right. I tell you what, because we do just have Honourable Hill Lewis there. Yeah.
No, just to follow on what Mr. Williams has just said, can I just check that ShopRite's presentation covered ShopRite, Checkers, and I think your low-cost outlet is it Boxer? You save, yeah. And who owns Boxer? Which
Pick and Pay.
Is that Pick and Pay, right? Okay, so I just want to check that it covers all those outlets.
The one issue that I think is important to note, just as we're going, is that when the presenters, retail industry, each one of them were responding to the how much local, how much imported, they were referring to their own purchases per se. So let us say we are getting in X tons from Europe, from Brazil, etc. That's there. But what they are saying is this happens to be Pick and Pay, less than 3% of our poultry sales is derived from imported product. Now, what to us, the number that is missing here, and somebody says something else, you know, we buy 90% local, and you assume then that the 10% is imported. What we need to know in order to work these figures out, because, you know, stats, man, I love stats. It's like a seesaw. I did an honors in that. Now, the thing is this, you need to give me what figure you're basing this on. What is 3%? What is it? I don't know. You see? I do not know. No one in this room knows. 3% means nothing. It's just fancy talk. So what, in order to help us here, you need to say less than 3%. Well, our total poultry sales are X. Give it to us in tons and kgs and the cost. And 3% of it is Y. We want that from everyone who has presented here, from every entity. That's going to assist us in tackling some of the other presenters who came here the other day. The second thing is on the labeling. I do want the DG or the DDG to assist us here, because to me, the intention of the Labeling Act was not only to say what is the source, but to assist the consumer in saying what type of meat it is or whatever product. Secondly, exactly what are they paying for here per X? And that's how I understood this Labeling Act to assist us. But it's over, first of all, to the DG, DTI, to assist us, and then You know, we'll hear from each one of you. Just indicate who'd like to come in next. Yes, DG. DG October.
Thanks, Chair. Just three broad points. The first is the, I think just to, again, to say the input by SPAR and Nando's in terms of their localization policy. I think, again, as a department, we really want to say that is the model that really we want for this country. I think on the second point is, I think, the question of the health and safety standards, especially of imported products. I think that point must be taken very seriously, because as you could see in the scandal that hit Brazil, where they've targeted the global market and it's very unsafe and standards. Honourable Chair, what I would propose, because obviously this is the responsibility of our Department of DAF, of Agricultural and Fisheries, they have inspectors. These inspectors are supposed to go across the world to ensure that the importers. So I would suggest that we, DAF then says it has capacity problems, but I think if we can have a joint committee between Trade and Industry and Department of Agriculture, we could agree a joint approach. And then the third one is just on this issue of the imported. I think maybe we shouldn't try to, because we're trying to find a solution to the industry, I don't think much will be done by trying to apportion blame, you know, to any players. But I think the issue about the imported content, as you said, Madam Chair, percentages are not very helpful. Because the way I understand the issue, it is only in one category of chicken that we have a problem. The reason Rainbow Chickens closed down, RCL, or cut their workforce, because in old chickens they don't have a problem. In supplying KFC, they don't have a problem. In supplying Nando's, they don't have a problem. They've got a problem only in what they call boning chicken, brown meat, or the IQFs. That is where the problem is. That is where all the imports are being concentrated. So they're wiping out that segment of the market. So what would be very useful is not the total percentage. We want just in the IQF category, what is the amount of tons or kilograms that you are importing, and what are you buying locally? That is what we need. We don't need the total. We know old chicken, white meat is very profitable. RCL is continuing to produce white meat. They're actually shifting all their production out of our IQFs and into white meat. So we don't. The percentage is not helpful. Give us the amount of actual in that particular category. How much tons are you importing? And it's, I think, so that will be useful. But as I said, the issue is not to apportion blame. We understand you are doing that because that is where the market is moving. But what we are proposing as a DTI, the same thing happened in the clothing and the textile industry. When Mr. Prices started getting in cheap imports, everybody had to follow Mr. Prices because they were taking over the market. Even Woolworths was forced to buy from China. But we've solved the problem by everybody working together to rebuild the local industry. But and as you say, obviously government plays part. That's why in the minister's budget vote, we are going to develop an incentive just for the sector, for agro-processing, which includes poultry. So, but government can then give its part by having an incentive just like we have in clothing and textile and autos. But then the industry, all the retailers must then also agree to adopt a localization strategy in that category of products as well. If the industry works together, the retailers, government, then we solve the problem like we did in clothing and textile. But if each one tries to now sort of shift the responsibility to everybody else, we're going to solve the problem. But as you know, this sector is so strategic, it is so labor intensive, that I think what we did in clothing and textile, we have to repeat for this sector. Just that's the three comments, Honourable Chair.
No, I really welcome them, DG. Mr. Strachan, DDG Strachan.
Ma'am, just to...
Just to add to the DG's contribution and answer the questions, we are working with the poultry producers and SAPO and AMIA on an export strategy which would include exports to developed countries and developing countries. I think just to note the fact that chicken or poultry is there are low barriers to entry in developing countries, including African countries, and so there are countries that use non-tariff barriers against exports, and this is a reality, and so, you know, it's easier said than done in poultry to get exports going, but we are working on it. And then I think it was one of the honourable members raised the issue of traceability. Frankly speaking, it's not quite as easy as that. Customs and SARS are responsible for the data on imports. Frankly speaking, we'd like to get a better understanding of who the traders are who are importing the bone-in and the mechanically deboned quarters, and a better understanding of precisely where you know, the high margins are being extracted in the value chain, and that data is not easy to come by. So with respect to suggest to the Honourable Member that the traceability questions, especially for the quarters, you know, the data isn't readily available. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, when I take your hands this time, just mention the company you represent, please. Thank you.
Right, it's Graham Clausen Spa, and I just want to try and clarify a few things with as to where the chicken is going. I listed the 9 importers that are bringing chicken in from all over the world, and one of the prevalences that is happening is that they are breaking down the chicken and they are putting it into their own packaging and they are selling it to the bottom end of the trade. Okay? They are doing it in unhygienic conditions. They are doing it in warehouses. It's not controlled, and they are flogging a mountain of chicken into the illiterate market, and I say illiterate market, into the outlying areas. The product looks the part, and it's 10 or 15 rand cheaper. And they are moving millions of tons into that market. And that's where the control needs to be, because they bring it in all these truckloads and boatloads of chicken. They break it down by hand. They put it into bags. They seal the bags in their little factories that are non-hygienic, and they are selling those off into the spaza stores, into the bottom end of the trade, and there's no control whatsoever. One of the interesting things that did occur with imported chicken was the fact that the chicken is not brined, and the consumer, the lower end consumer, actually was preferring the chicken because it wasn't brined, it wasn't soft and mushy and full of coagulants. It was real chicken. And that's why there's been the demand for imported chicken in the bottom end of the market, because it actually, in theory, is whole chicken. So I just thought I'd add that to you.
At the same time, have you responded to some of the questions that have come up? You tried to. Thank you. Then that's Mr. Clausen's from SPA. Next person, would you like Nando's then? Thank you. So Nando's, Mr. Swanepoel.
Chris Swanepoel, Nando's. I just think it's important for us to distinguish between the brining that happens with IQF chicken and frozen product, where I suppose traditionally it was used to make the chicken way more, be able to sell it like that. In our industry, we do inject our chicken. It's all fresh. We don't freeze the brine into the chicken. We buy chicken per portion and we sell it per portion. So the brine in Nando's case is specifically there for flavor and for quality of the fresh chicken. And when the regulation came in, we did have quite a big problem distinguishing between these two things, because it's not used in the same way at all. So I'd just like to note that going forward, it would be the difference between retail and food services when it comes to injection is quite significant, well, in our case specifically.
Mr. Swanepoel, and that's our very first one. Is that ShopRite, Mr. Brand, is it?
It's Chris Jordan. I just want to point out something that we've left out, and SAPO always seem to be quoting these things in the newspapers and on the amount of imports that are coming into the country. MDM, which is mechanically deboned meat, is never quoted. And I can speak under correction, but I reckon it's about 40% of imports that are coming into the country. I don't know of any local supplier that produces MDM in the country. MDM is used for bologna, which is also a huge protein in our country. So I just wanted to point that out, which they always quote as part of the poultry, but it's actually MDM. So they use that as saying that there's so much chicken coming in, but majority of that, 40%, I believe, is MDM.
Thank you very much, Mr. Durden. Honourable Van Schalkwyk.
Chairperson, what I forgot to ask, I think one of the members did ask, but none of the retailers replied on in terms of the triple B double E, in terms of the suppliers that they are using locally. Thank you, Chair.
Much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. I'm just thinking, Amy was here the other day, weren't they? Weren't you here the other day? All right. Right. What I'd like to do...
I wasn't here personally, but one of my colleagues was.
Yeah, well, of course, you know what I mean is the institution was here. Can you hold on for a minute? We're not going to prevent you from engaging, but we'd like to... the responses from those who have been here this morning first. Thank you. Right. Let's look on my left again. We still have, of course, others. There's Woolworths, there's Pick and Pay.
Honourable
Woolworths, where are they?
We are here, Honourable Chairperson.
Oh, right there, yes.
What I'm going to try and do is answer all the questions that the Honourable members of Mantashe Williams, Honourable Kurnoff, Honourable Estazen, Honourable Van Schalkwyk and Honourable Hill Lewis raised. I think from the first, one of the big issues is we'd be very happy to share all our tonnage and our volume and not percentages. We have no issue with that. I also think, just to be clear on the local, that all our fresh chicken and all our IQF chicken is all local 100%. So there's no imported chicken into any of our fresh or IQF. But as I did state earlier on, IQF is a very small percentage of our business. It's only 1%. The only place we have to import is we need specific cuts for some of our prepared meals, and the local market cannot give us that volume and that specification that we need, so we're then kind of forced to import from a few suppliers from overseas, which we also independently audit and have relationships with. But we're very, very happy to support 100% local on that side, and in fact, as I said early on, we're trying to work with local suppliers to give us those products, but the challenge for the local suppliers is to balance the carcass or the cuts that we need. Just from a pricing point of view on the brine, when the new brining regulations came in, all our value-added and products that we were injecting, similar to Nando's, only for flavour and enhancing of the product, not from to help with the price, we were already under the regulation there. So the new law came in at 50%, and most of our products were actually around about 10%, and we find that at that level, that's what you want to do to enhance the eat of the product. Anything over that, you tend to start watering the product down. So we had no price issues on our value-added side. And then on our IQF side, we were at 24%, so we had to come into 15%. So there was we had to reduce there up at 1% of our business, but what we did do is keep the mass the same, and we still sold 2 kgs of meat, so the customer was getting more meat, and we had to obviously put the price up slightly, and in recent times we've actually reduced that price because we can be a bit more competitive there because it is such a small part of our business. We support the issue of standardization of pack sizes if we needed to go that route from a Woolworths point of view. We have no issues with that at all, so if there were the SPA recommendation, we would support 100%. Just from a private label point of view, what we mean by private label is that over the years we only produce our own food in South Africa. We work closely with all the local suppliers, and that's when I refer to that 92% of the food we sell in Woolies is all local, but they produce specific products for us to our quality standard that our customers want. So we work with all our local produce suppliers, our protein suppliers, and then they have specific specifications and specific quality of product that they do for us only. And then we do stock some brands, but that's only on the non-food and grocery side. So that would be your Skip and your Coke. And we've done that because customers have asked us to stock those products for their own convenience. I think also just some of the other questions was around transformation. From a Woolies point of view, I think, I'm not sure what the industry benchmark was, but we were one of the top industries from a transformation point of view in the old scorecards. Woolies was at a level four, and we've worked with all our suppliers from a procurement point of view, and then we're obviously working now with our suppliers on our new scores and our new challenges, which is mostly around ownership, which we absolutely support 100%. And we have a lot of local initiatives with our suppliers who we've been working. So, for example, we've got a Ruben Machlala who does all our eggs for us now, totally black-owned supplier. We've got a lot of small SD and ED enterprises, which we're happy to share with the honourable members if they need the detail of all those projects. So I think I covered most issues raised that were asked.
I'm very pleased you spoke to the suppliers that you've got and the profiling thereof, because we would have liked that to have come from all of you. You know, we are trying to transform our economy and turn it into a more inclusive one. And, you know, the old cry when I first started off as chair, you wouldn't find any woman in the financial section. You'd look for the woman of any colour. But now when I look around and I look and I see a sea of white faces, including my own here and among the retailers, and I really don't see this transformation happening. And unless you speak to it, I wouldn't know, and the committee members wouldn't know, you see. This is what we see. And Pick and Pay has still, you know, also got to respond. But I would like people to come back. We certainly do have the time now. And just indicate if they can very quickly. If you can't, then please put it in writing. What is the profile of your suppliers looking like? You know, how have you developed them and so on and so forth? Are you on board with the country's vision? But like I said, did you want to come in on that, Honourable Hill Lewis? Well, just let me get Pick and Pay in. Thank you. Extra in.
That's Mr. Ackerman with an extra in. Jeez, there's three questions. I think it's more than that. There's three questions that I would like to respond to. The first one, you highlighted something about the imports, the 3% that we're referring to. It is fortunately not one of those misleading statistics. All that I did in calculating the numbers to say total Pick and Pay sales. And then I said total Pick and Pay sales of imported products, and take the one, divide by the other, and that's the number that I gave you. Nothing more than that. There is the fact that the information is not readily available within the marketplace, so subject to the confidentiality that we could agree on with one another, Pick and Pay would have no problem to share the information with the committee, as per your request. The pricing was the second one, moves on the cost and selling prices, again around the 15 to the 18%, so it's similar to the 17% that was mentioned within ShopRite. The one thing that we did do on the IQF piece, specifically the 2 kilogram IQF, was to agree with our suppliers and to put it on the packaging for the customers to say there would be a minimum of 12 portions in the packet, because we know if you observe shopping behavior at the store, and the majority of customers, especially those that's really under pressure with a very tight budget, they would take the packet and they would shake the packet and then would feel with their hands how many portions there are. So we make sure, again, the shopping behavior of the customer, that we're able to add value through that and agree that there's a minimum of 12 portions in there. And then in terms of the suppliers, you have requested that we supply information regarding our BEE status, and we will be submitting that in writing as per your request. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have Honourable Hill Lewis on the floor.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask one follow-up. I think the DG makes a very apposite point. It's easy to elide over the specific import penetration in IQF. So do you have those figures at hand to all the retailers? What percentage of your IQF line in particular is imported?
That's very valid. And let's not just get the percent, but the tonnage, like I say. You know, percentages are useful for TV shows, but not here. Right.
like to answer some of the questions that are still outstanding. The first question is, which banners we included? We included the Hungry Lion, ShopRite, Checkers, and USAID, which is basically all the food site barrier banners on our site. The question was about the 15% brine reduction versus the 17% increase. The reason why it differs is because the amount of chickens going through the manufacturer's plants hasn't increased. So the overhead cost remains the same. The cost of the bag in which the IQF is put remains the same. Everything else remains the same except that you're putting through 15% less rand sales. And that's the reason why the difference comes out. In terms of brining, we've reported that our volume has dropped by 20%, but I just want to clarify to everyone, understand that the brining regulations, although published in April 2016, will only become effective on the 22nd of October 2016. And then the Department of Agriculture gave us all extension until the 31st of January 2017 to sell out of any old product that we had. So the information that we're reporting on is basically the last 3 months only. So it's very early days to determine what the total projection on sales would be and the total impact. That is the numbers as they stand currently. And I must say, they have actually improved from what happened in the first month when the shock to the market came, when the prices increased.
Thank you.
And then on the markup of the 45%, we've declared our markup that we make on IQF chicken. It's minus 2 to 2%. You're welcome to order our books. There's nothing to hide from us there. The question on how much cheaper does a product need to be before we consider to import it? We would work on 10% or more. As soon as we start eating those, we would do further investigations to determine if it's worthwhile to pursue an import offer. And just to clarify on the volume of imports, how we worked it out was similar to what Mr. Ackerman stated. The only difference is we excluded any processed chicken. So when I say processed chicken, I'm talking chicken crumb products, chicken fingers, chicken nuggets, and those were all excluded. We only looked at fresh and frozen chicken in an unprocessed format, product that you have to take home and cook still. Question on how much IQF we actually import. We import no IQF as a group, purely because the product isn't available internationally. You struggle to find that specific pack format internationally. We do have the numbers available in terms of our import versus percentages, the actual tonnages, and as per Mr. Ackerman's response, that information is not freely available in the market, and we're willing to share it as long as we can agree on confidentiality. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There was a Mr. David Walpert. I addressed you earlier, didn't I? You from the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters, what we called AMI. Is that right? AMI. Right, you wanted to just participate a little here? Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a couple of general points based on what I've heard here this morning. First of all, as was said a minute ago, the 3% seems to include fresh chicken. One should bear in mind that there's no such thing as imported fresh chicken, so we should be comparing frozen chicken only, not frozen with frozen and fresh. In terms of numbers, and I know you're not happy with percentages, but I'll come to actual numbers in a minute. The total imports of chicken represent 14%, not 20%, but 14% of total South African chicken consumption. Now, the reason for the difference, as was pointed out by somebody else here a little bit earlier, was the importation of MDM, which is a product that is used in the manufacture of polonies and sausages and is not, I repeat, not manufactured in South Africa, so it doesn't compete directly with any South African product. As far as actual tonnage is concerned, we import on an annual basis 230,000 tons of bone-in chicken, and we import on an annual basis a total chicken of 330,000 tons, and that excludes MDM, which on its own represents about 200,000 tons. There was a lot of talk today about where does this chicken go to, and I would like to address it as best I can. As an association, we don't get involved in commercial transactions, so it's quite difficult for us to access this information. But having spoken to our members, the responses that I came up with are a little bit different from what was said here today. It does not all go to the poorer informal sector. There's a huge amount that goes to independent supermarkets. There's a lot of independent supermarkets situated in South Africa. A huge amount goes to the catering industry, and the reason for that is that many caterers do not want brine chicken, so they use imported chicken. And a huge amount also goes to small butcheries, and there are thousands of them in the outlying districts in South Africa. As far as the MDM is concerned, that goes to production establishments like Enterprise, Bluff Meat, and places like Escort. And as I said, they are used in the manufacture of sausages and polonies. As far as health and sanitary and phytosanitary checks are concerned, I think we must bear in mind that DAFF is responsible for these health checks. They check every single imported container, and they maintain that these containers and their checking processes are up to EU standards, which is amongst the highest in the world. And I can tell you for a fact that we have very, very few rejections. As far as overseas chicken manufacturing plants are concerned, DAFF has a list which is reflected on its website of overseas approved establishments. And this list is a constantly changing list. In fact, in the last month, there were 6 establishments from Brazil that were actually delisted. And quite honestly, if import health standards or checking standards were improved, we wouldn't have any problem with it. But as far as we're concerned, we don't think it's nearly as bad as has been made out here this morning. I want to repeat something that has been said at previous hearings, and at this particular hearing, the biggest problem facing local chicken is the fact that there's no credible export program. Without an export program, they cannot take up excess production, number one, and they cannot balance their carcasses, number two. Two absolute essentials in running a successful industry. That's all I'd like to say. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We've got a couple of hands. I'm not sure who that is at the back.
Madam Chair, it's Martin Stander from Country Bird Holdings and also from SAPA.
Did you sign a register, sir?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, then go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, just a couple of quick comments. I think the one that is important, the new brining regulations, the question was, I think by Honourable Hill Lewis, around the, is it being inspected? So I think it's correct to say that DAFF, they do not have their own or enough personnel to do that, but an independent body was assigned, and there are assignees visiting the abattoirs on a monthly basis where they check records, and the industry itself is funding that by 1 cent per bird. So that will cover that aspect. I think the other one, just maybe in comment to Mr. Walpert from AMI, I think if you just add the size of the imports, and I think that still is the problem, that 230 or 240 tons of portions, together with the old birds, you get over 500,000 tons, which is bigger than the biggest producer, Astral, just to put that into context. And I don't think the issue is necessarily at the ports where these product is inspected, but it comes back to what Mr. Clausen's mentioned. Once it is received in bulk, it needs to be thawed, it needs to be repacked, and it's sold on. And I think that is the big concern.
Did you say you were from Country Bird?
That's correct, Manager.
I couldn't find any Country Birds on the register.
It will be CBH. It will be listed as CBH.
All right. Well, I think Ms. Makanda, Tandiswa, if you would go down there and then get some assistance as to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Manager.
Now, we did, of course, have... Amy was at a previous engagement, if I recall, and so on and so forth. And the more they contribute, the more we learn, of course. But some of you wanted to still take another shot at it? Was it yourself, Mr. Clarsons, down there?
I'd just like to ask Mr. Walpole if they have a check for age of chicken. For the age of the bird. How old is the chicken coming into the country?
All right, we'll take that in a minute, the chronological age. Yourself, sir?
Sorry, my question is not directly at them. It's more to answer your question on BEE. So from our perspective, I think it's important to remember that Nando's is not a retail outlet. We are in the QSR industry, and our demands of suppliers is different. If you don't get certainty of supply on the product that you're getting in, it means your restaurants cannot sell those products. It's not like retail where you can maybe have two or three producers on the shelf and you're still okay. The second thing is on chicken in terms of BEE, it's specifically quite a difficult one in terms of the chicken producers because the barriers to entry are very high, both in terms of the difficulty of producing high-quality final product and also in terms of the cost of entry because it's highly capital-intensive. So a lot of the BEE producers are downstream of your abattoir, which means it's chicken farms and that sort of thing. So often we engage with our suppliers on that to try and make sure that that happens. And third, on this particular point, it's just to say Nando's does believe in this, and we are responsible corporate citizens. We do have quite a lot of activity in this space, but I wouldn't do it justice today to try and elaborate on that, and we'll submit something in writing. And the second point from my side on the exports, I would second the call to look at the export program. We have a number of African countries where we have Nando's outlets and we aren't able to send them chicken at all, even neighboring countries, and that's often artificial barriers. So whereas they could be getting a better product cheaper from South Africa, we cannot send it to them. That's it from my side.
Right, I think the whole purpose here, especially for our two new parliamentarians on this poultry issue, why did we take an interest? We took an interest because it was so important. DTI is concerned, trade and industry. Its mandate, among anything else, is to grow jobs, employment creation. And it became apparent that hundreds of jobs, if not thousands, was at risk in the poultry industry. And initially, we were told this was due to trading deals, etc. Then, the more we engaged, it's become very clear that it isn't a simple answer, but that there is a need, and I want to reiterate what the DG said. We do need to work together. We're not going to resolve anything by punishing people, etc. It may well involve, looking at tariffs, etc. But we need to be frank with each other as well. What is there that we can do in the way in which we manage our operations, work with each other? How do we get this to the efficiency that would bring in, retain the labor, and bring in the profits, your profit margins that you have identified? Now, to that end, we still have KFC to engage, as I mentioned. But we also want, I think Ms. Sheldon has just put down a few of the issues. We raised the classification on the triple BEE codes, etc. What sort of classification are you looking at? And when you're looking at your suppliers, perhaps in particular, please provide your suppliers the BEE profile. Then please provide the total purchases in terms of price and volumes for local and imported. I think what you're calling it, am I right, DG, IQF? The IQF, whatever. You know, with it saying like IQ, I wasn't sure if you were testing the chicken's IQ, especially now as we asked about the ages. But that's going to be coming because there was a question directed at Amy on the ages. Then please provide your average markup on chicken. Average. So, Amy, you got the question there, did you, Mr. Wolpert?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. As far as expired chicken is concerned, it is expected and it is rejected. Most of our importers are not backyard operators, but they operate state-of-the-art facilities. And if you look at SPAR's submission today, they've named 9 importers, and all of them have state-of-the-art facilities. But more important, Mr. Stunder raised a point just now, which I would like to confirm. He referred to the assignees that will be checking the aging and labeling of chicken, and they have allocated 10 to 20% of their budget for the checking of imported chicken. So we're happy that proper checking is and will be taking place.
Thank you very much. Yes, Mr. Clark.
Those are the companies that we deal with, and we have inspected their premises and we've made sure that they're suitable to deal with. That's why I've listed them. There are hundreds more that aren't suitable that are buying chicken from those companies and redealing it in their firms. Okay, so I wasn't, and I didn't ask you about expired chicken. I asked you, how do you check the life of the chicken? Because there's chicken coming in that hasn't expired, but it's very late in its life. And that's a concern.
Shelf life.
It's not expired. I never asked you if you're bringing in expired chicken. I asked you, how do you check the life of the chicken? It's a very different question to how you answer it.
Well, then, it was cooled down a little. Yes, Mr. Wolpert.
I understand the question, and I'm quite happy with the role of the assignees that are going to be checking all the establishments and all the product in the establishments, and this will be absolutely and completely taken care of.
Honourable Hill-Lew.
Can I just ask something of Mr. Wolpert? Firstly, do you confirm or dispute the figures on import penetration by SAPA? And if you confirm them at around 20% of volumes, if you confirm them, then based on what the retailers have told us today, where is it going?
Through the chair, as I said, most of it is going to independent supermarkets. It's going to the catering industry and small butcheries. That's where most of the product is going. And there are some of the major supermarkets. For example, SPAR, if you look at their own figure, it was somewhere way in excess of 20%. I think it was 23-odd%.
And so you confirm the penetration?
I confirm the penetration, yes. But I'm sorry to interrupt. The 20%, I want to repeat what I said earlier, includes MDM. If you exclude MDM, you're looking at something like 14%.
A point here that I've been alerted to, you know, Ms. Sheldon is our content, advisor. And she was indicating that it would be worth our while to try and get your, assistance here, Mr. Wolpert, on the percentage of what percentage of importers and exporters are listed with you, your association. Do you, you know, have you got all of them belonging to Amy or not?
No, Madam Chair, we don't. But by volume, we represent about 80% of importers of meat and chicken into South Africa.
All right. Well, look, to everyone sitting here who made a presentation and who realized how important it is to be here with us this morning, because you also want to create this inclusive economy and retain employment. We don't want to have to ask people to leave. We would like you, if you think of anything else when you've left here and you're back within your organization, please write, I think it was to Mr. Hermans, was it? Communicate with him in writing, but plus those 3 things that we requested as well. And we will then take this further ourselves. We will engage with the DTI again so that when we do make our recommendations to Parliament, they are well informed. and in the interests of our people and our country as a whole. Thank you very much for being here with us this morning. Yes? Was that a hand? It's so far at the back, you see. I needed a telescope. Oh, right, okay.
The three things that you require will be sent to us in writing.
We can email
it
to
My name is Charlotte Nguna from the South African Poultry Association. I just wanted to point out that after the discussions today, when we separate the production from between fresh and frozen, then the percentage of what's coming in as a percentage of frozen is much higher than what it would be as a percentage of total production. So the 20% now becomes 40% of frozen instead of just,
I'm going to ask you to put all that in writing for us because, you know, we'll need to study that. It's not something that's flying in one ear and leaving the other. All right. Thank you very, very much. Honorable Hill Lewis.
Yes, but Chair, I actually wasn't aware that SAPA was in the room, but I'm very glad that they are. What is their response to the very clear direct contradiction to what they said on brining?
I mean, you can see it's quite unanimous across parties, this position. It's taken us by surprise to hear this. Right.
I would respond to that. The brining regulations came into effect last year, and then what I remember the question very clearly because I was in attendance on the day. It was these figures that we're talking about, and the crisis itself. Does it have to do with brining? What impact is brining, or what part of it is the impact of brining? And the answer to that question was that it's very difficult to say now because it's early days, as the last of the old stock could be sold until the end of January. But then we will do an assessment 6 months or so into the process to see what the impact is.
It isn't exactly what I recollect, but far be it for us to talk about our old memories. What I will do is we're going to study this, and I'm looking at members. They're also a little puzzled, to say the least. But let us get our facts straight. You are welcome to put a further clarification in writing, but assuredly, those of us sitting here from the committee who were there have a different recollection. But let us first study, go back to our notes and our facts, get together with our researcher, our senior economist, Ms. Madalani, content specialist, and then we'll be in a better position to comment on SAPA. Is that agreed, committee? All right. And on that note, I would once again thank all of you for coming down here. And we do have somebody else that we must engage with, the National Empowerment Fund. So what I would ask you to continue your networking out of this room. Thank you.
Thank you.
something
Thank you.